KALW.
That's perfect. This is good.
Yeah. All right, let's get to work. Meanwhile, we'll drill the holes. I'll put the bolts in, and then that's it.
I wish we were able to do this at record time.
Two young men are working to keep public transit alive.
What made you love public transit?
I hate driving.
Today, a story about buses, bromance, and bureaucracy. Then we'll meet someone who creates languages for major fantasy films and shows.
Really, just one day, I woke up and decided I wanted to learn every language on the planet.
And we hear from pioneering journalist Tasneem Raja on the importance of local news outlets today.
Just keep doing the work the way that it needs to be done, keeping in mind that good journalism is accuracy.
Local voices with local stories. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Daryl Owens and Mingwei Samuel will do just about anything to keep public transit alive. Some may say the two Bay Area 20-somethings are partners in crime, but in reality, Daryl and Mingwei just really love buses. KALW's Lina Najia Basuni followed the two friends on their quest, and what she heard was a love letter to public transit.
I guess you have to go left at the end of the street, but keep...
Go, come on.
Mingwei Samuel is having a hard time getting into his friend Daryl Owen's car.
Bro, no, just... I'm just gonna break my window. I know it's beat up, but I don't want to beat up your car.
Mingwei's trying to crawl through the window.
The nature of the straps makes it so that we can't open the back doors.
So, what's strapped on top of Daryl's beater?
There we go.
A homemade bus bench.
In most cases, I think people who might be a little suspicious towards the bench just think we're doing something sinister. Like, why are these two young guys putting this bench out? And what is this, like a crime sting?
I'm in the car with the bench guys, or brothers of the bench, or...
Shivio said bench guys, I think.
Guys, oh, okay.
Which I like better than bench boys.
I like boys better.
Like, you like the alliteration?
Yeah, BBs. That's kind of cute.
The BBs and I are driving slowly through Rockridge, diligently dodging cats and pedestrians, taking extra care to watch for buses and bikers. Something they say the city is not doing.
City's problem is that they don't care about bus riders. It is presumed that you ride the bus because you're poor, and you make more money, you'll buy a car.
There's only one reason these two transit activists would be caught dead in a car. They're trying to get a message to the city.
Build the bench. Every bus stop should have a bench. Prioritize transit riders just as you prioritize automobiles. Actually, ideally, even more so.
Their campaign, like a lot of them nowadays, all started with a tweet. Daryl's always noticed how many bus stops don't have benches. Every time he saw a bus stop without a bench, he'd snap a photo, tag the city, and post it on social media to his large following of fellow transit defenders. The picture would inevitably go viral, but his complaints and calls for action would fall through the cracks.
Transit officials would see them and not really do anything about them.
Everything changed when Daryl's somewhat socially adjacent, online/IRL mutual, Mingwei Samuel, saw one of the posts and decided to take things a step further.
He posted to Twitter this picture of his neighbor who had recently had, I think, knee surgery or something, sitting on the curb, legs in the road, sort of askew, because there's no bench at this bus stop.
Mingwei took matters into his own hands. He just built a bench, towed it over on his bike, and installed it at the bus stop.
It sort of launched this whole project.
The pair teamed up and learned how to make ADA-compliant benches on YouTube and from other local bench DIYers. 5 months later, and they've installed more than 26 benches around the East Bay. And there's no better bonding activity than talking buses and building benches.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, we're kind of like bros now.
Yeah.
That's not the guy, you know, what is it, like men have a male friendship problem? Hey, this isn't a solution. Go build gorilla benches, right? Yeah.
That's what we're doing here today. We've pulled up on a bus stop in downtown Oakland. The pair throw on orange vests and crank loose the straps holding the bench to Daryl's car.
That's perfect. This is good.
Yeah. All right, let's get to work.
Mingwei will drill the holes. I'll put the bolts in. And then that's it.
We should be able to do this in record time.
Daryl isn't exaggerating. The two programmers by day have got this down to a science. They dance around the stained wooden bench, carefully measuring the distance from the bus and the sidewalk. They drill long screws into the cement and blow the concrete dust away. In about 5 minutes, there's a new bench installed in downtown Oakland, just in time for the next bus to shimmy into the stop. We run back to Daryl's now benchless beater. Mingwei opens the door. He doesn't need to climb through the window anymore. And already, the boys are scheming their next big sting.
All I start thinking about is more places that need a bench, and I'm looking at this stop here.
There's a certain sentimentality to Daryl's passion for buses that melts into every level of his life. He and his girlfriend used to live along the same bus line and would travel up and down it so often, friends dubbed them the 12-line bus couple.
Riding the bus is romantic in many ways.
So the project's not really a crime sting. It's a love letter to public transit. And like any good love story, there are often invisible forces that get in the way. In this case, Daryl says those forces are city bureaucracy, public transit defunding, and inequitable public policies. This love letter is a challenge to those forces, a call to action, and a promise to hold city officials accountable.
You know, you can complain, but if there's no threat to do anything, then people don't care.
And at first, it worked. When Mingwei installed that first bench last December, the city of Berkeley replaced it with an official one a few weeks later. So, Daryl and Mingwei kept putting in benches in Berkeley and Oakland. But the cities didn't replace any more of the benches.
The response to it has mostly been actually pretty positive by government officials. And they've said like, wow, you know, this is awesome. These guys are going to put up the benches, you know, cool. And it's kind of like, that wasn't exactly what we were going for. We wanted to shame them into doing it, not like cheer us on.
There isn't publicly available data on the number of bus stops that have benches. And the city's governments are the ones that pay for them, not AZ Transit. I reached out to the cities of Berkeley and Oakland, but they didn't provide comments. AZ Transit said they don't authorize the citizen-installed bus benches. Daryl thinks that as funding for AZ Transit got cut, ridership went down, which made cities less incentivized to invest in transit infrastructure. And then there's the maze of bureaucracy to contend with.
It takes years of effort just to do something basic like a bench. So I'm showing the city, you can really do it if you want to do it. Matter of fact, the city even did it themselves when they replaced Mingwei's first bench. They could have done that for years and they never bothered to do it until we did it ourselves.
For the cool price of $80, a bucket of YouTube carpentry videos, an uncomfortable round trip in a beater car, and tons of determination, Daryl and Mingwei's legally ambiguous project did indeed send a message. They got the city's attention and started a conversation about how most bus stops have nowhere for people to sit. The thing is, the two buds wish they didn't have to make bus benches. But as we all know, love can make you do just about anything. In Oakland, I'm Lena Bisuni for Cross Currents.
I miss the bus. I miss the bus. I miss the bus. I miss the bus. I went to bed late, but I didn't.
Lena reported that story as part of this year's Audio Academy, and she's graduating this Thursday. Congratulations, Lena. You can find that story and more at klw.org/crosscurrents.
And I don't know what to do.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Henat Baba. Bringing a sci-fi fantasy story to the screen is more than just special effects. Culture is important, too. Artists create worlds, communities, and languages, like in Game of Thrones. That is the Mother of Dragons herself, Princess Daenerys Targaryen, speaking in the fictional language Valyrian. David J. Peterson created that language for Game of Thrones, and he's done work for the recent Witcher and Dune adaptations. Peterson studied linguistics at UC Berkeley and later co-founded the group The Language Creation Society. He spoke with KALW's Janae Darden about his love of language.
David, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm very excited about this. I love the Bay, and so it's just so cool to talk to somebody from the Bay. You know, I don't get up there as much as I want to now.
Oh, well, I'm excited to have you and just to learn more about the work that you do, the really amazing work and art that you do. Where did your interest in language come from?
It kind of came out of nowhere, really, because I wasn't somebody who was really interested in language as a kid. I wasn't somebody who was like creating codes and ciphers or anything as a kid. Really, just one day I woke up and decided I wanted to learn every language on the planet. That was when I was 17 years old. I think it maybe would have been like February or something, 1998. And all of a sudden, I just wanted to learn every language. So I started studying languages on my own at home. Every single book I had at home that we already had, I was learning Latin. I was learning French on my own at home. I just tried to study them because I found language fascinating all of a sudden. And that passion kind of carried me to UC Berkeley when I got there for undergrad. You know, I went in as a declared English major because I had a plan. I was going to major in English. I was going to get my teaching credential. And then I was going to write fiction during the summer when I was teaching high school English. It was, that was my very clear and set in stone plan heading into college. And, you know, it started out all right because, like, I got to skip the dreaded English 1A and 1B and started writing my coursework, my major work. So I had a bunch of free units and I was like, wow, there are a bunch of languages here. They teach like all kinds of languages here. So I can just use those free units to learn languages. And so I did. Started taking Arabic. Absolutely blew my mind.
So you create languages.
Sure.
What inspires the languages you create? Like, do you look at art? Do you look at other cultures? Like when you were thinking of languages for Game of Thrones and for Dune?
So, well, first, I mean, if you're talking about a language that's been adapted, you always have to start with what somebody else has done. So it's like, you know, Dothraki from Game of Thrones, it started with the words that were in the book and analyzing the structure. Same thing with Dune, same thing with The Witcher, same thing with Shadow and Bone. You got to start with the material that is already existing. When you're creating something new, right? A language is essentially a response to constraints. And so then the question is, well, what kind of interesting constraints can we put on this to produce an interesting result? And what might be a unique response to that?
So you co-founded this organization, the Language Creation Society. Tell us more about it.
Well, that starts actually at Berkeley. At Berkeley, we resurrected a club called the Society of Linguistics Undergraduates, which was fantastic. And Slug did a lot of things. We kind of like built up a cool undergraduate community for linguistics undergraduates. So after I graduated and I was at UC San Diego, there was another undergraduate in linguistics there named Cy. And Cy kind of hooked up with Slug and got the idea to create a DECAL class. So DECAL at Cal stands for Democratic Education at Cal, where an undergraduate can teach a course. A lower division course, and you get elective credit for it. And so I put together this DECAL on language creation. In order to help sustain it in the future, so I went through the ASUC, the student body organization for Cal, to help create an ASUC club called the Language Creation Society. I think it was the Berkeley Language Creation Society. And so then Cy and I and eight others were the founding members of this Language Creation Society 501c3 nonprofit, which was founded in 2007. So they were like, and I was part of the board, we were completely blindsided when in 2009, in the summer, we were just emailed absolutely cold by Dan Weiss, one of the producers of Game of Thrones, seeing if they could, if the Language Creation Society could recommend somebody to create the Dothraki language. So we were completely out of our depth there. We had no idea what we were doing or what to do. The idea that we all agreed was a good idea was to hold a competition.
So you all within the community decided to hold a contest, not the people from Game of Thrones.
Oh, no, that was us. That was us.
Okay.
And so at that point, right, so this is the Language Creation Society's job. All of us who were part of the board, we were also language creators. And so we had to decide which of us were going to help create and run the competition and which of us actually wanted to compete. And so I decided I really wanted to compete. And so I recused myself at that point. I wasn't a part of designing the competition or running it or anything like that. There were two rounds. The first round was judged by other language creators who themselves were not competing. And then after that was winnowed down to four finalists and an alternate. And then from there, we kind of worked on our proposal some more, submitted them to the producers. And the producers chose mine.
That's a life-changing contest, David.
It was. It was a pretty big thing. And I knew how big it was, not actually because of what the books were that were being adapted, but because it was on HBO. I figured, well, if HBO is doing something like this, it's going to be big.
What's on your heart to say in one of the languages you've created?
The House of the Dragon is coming back for its second season. So my favorite line that I always remember from High Valyrian is "Zaldriz es buzdarik sozdaor," which is a line: "A dragon is not a slave."
That was language creator David J. Peterson speaking with KLW's Janae Darden. That interview was co-produced by Porfirio Rangel. You can hear David's work in the series House of the Dragon. The new series premieres on HBO June 16th. This is Cross Currents. I'm Henat Baba. The International Women's Media Foundation recently honored Tasneem Raja with their Gwen Ifill Award. It was given for her leadership in local journalism and her legacy training journalists from underrepresented communities. Raja studied journalism at UC Berkeley. She went on to work for NPR and Mother Jones, among other national outlets. And she came back to the Bay, where she became a founder of CitySide, the organization behind the local journalism outlets Berkeleyside, Oakland, Side and the new Richmond Side. I spoke to Raja about the state of journalism and why she thinks local news outlets are crucial today.
Berkeleyside was immediately on my radar because I was really interested in different hyper-local news startups that were popping up across the country. And I immediately saw that Berkeleyside was figuring out how to provide high quality local news that really felt local, like really felt like, hey, Berkeley, we live here too. We love Berkeley too. We know that there's stuff that's working well about this place. There's stuff that's not working so well about this place. And we're going to be here to just like bring some high quality journalism and storytelling to all of that. In 2019, the founders of Berkeleyside and I connected, and they asked me to join as a founder of what has today become CitySide Journalism Initiative. And they asked me if I would be interested in launching the newsroom that has now become Oaklandside.
And over time, we've grown to an organization with a budget of about $4.2 million a year. We're a staff of about 30 people now. Two-thirds of us are journalists in Berkeley, Oakland, and soon, later this month, Richmond.
You've done a lot of work mentoring generations of journalists from underrepresented groups, and the International Women's Media Foundation is awarding you the Gwen Ottle Award for your track record on that. Can you talk about drawing in marginalized communities into newsrooms and the impact that has? What effect does that have?
When you're able to bring into your newsroom people who are coming from a wide range of both personal and professional experiences, and then you're asking them to go out there and connect with people who are coming from a wide range of personal and professional experiences, the more that they're able to just bring that authentic connection or that authentic, genuine sense of, hey, I know a little bit about what you're talking about because my personal and professional experiences have led me to a place where I'm able to converse with you at a level that respects the story that you're trying to get out there into the world. We want our newsroom to produce storytelling that is valued by people across Oakland. And so the better we staff the newsroom to be able to bring in those stories, do that reporting in a way that's going to unlock information and stories that really haven't been out there before, we're going to be more successful as a newsroom. It's just good business. Mm.
Some people are talking about this moment as being a moment of reckoning for journalism in this country. Cuts in funding to public media. It's an election year. Mistrust of media. How do you see this moment for journalism?
I think that journalism has gone through cycles of what today we're calling reckoning over decades. I really appreciated colleagues across the American journalism industry who, in the immediate months after George Floyd was killed, Breonna Taylor was killed, and we started this conversation of, oh my gosh, a reckoning, you know, in the American press, who said, hang on a second, we need to go back and actually look back at some commissions and organizations that sprang up 50 years ago, especially around the intersections of race and everything else in our country, and say, these aren't new conversations. We've had this conversation over and over and over again. And so to me, it's just, you just keep doing the work the way that it needs to be done, keeping in mind that North Star of good journalism is accuracy.
As you're presented with this award, what are you feeling right now? What are you thinking? And what does it mean for you in this moment?
You know, when you rise up in the ranks in a newsroom, nobody tells you when you know, are going to go from being a reporter to an editor that, like, it gets a little lonely. You know, being the boss can be a little lonely. And because you're not out there getting bylines or publishing your own stories anymore, your work can get a little invisible in terms of you're trying to sort of look at the whole chessboard and move pieces around in ways that, you know, may not pay off for like 12 months or 5 years or 10 years. And so it's feels really, really gratifying and more than anything energizing to have somebody say, hey, we see that you're playing the long game here. We see that you're trying to do things that are going to hopefully not only serve you, but serve your colleagues, and not just today and tomorrow, but hopefully for many years to come. And hey, I'm not always going to get it right, but I hope that I'll just be lucky enough to keep doing this work.
You start here in the Bay Area after your UC Berkeley degree. Your class is the class that started Oakland North and Mission Local. But then you go off into the world and you do national news and you're on Code Switch and you Mother Jones. But something brought you back to the very, very local. What is it about local journalism that drew you back in?
For me, we have cityside newsrooms are supported by lots of different kinds of people. And one of the groups that supports us is just people who are giving us $1 a month, often, you know, $5 a month, maybe $20 a month if they can afford it.
And every time someone becomes a new, what we call member to a Cityside newsroom, we get a little message from them that shows up where somebody is just telling us, like in one sentence, why? Why did you become a member? And it's the best part of my day. They'll say things like, you reported on the school my mom graduated from and that I graduated from and that my kids are going to go to. And you just made me feel really good about what's going on at that school. And one of the messages that we get that makes me, I think, is one of the most gratifying for me as an Oakland resident and, you know, thinking about our newsroom in Oakland is when people say, you're just helping me feel proud about living in Oakland. Thank you for telling all of Oakland's stories. Thank you for telling stories of power and pride and joy in our community, because we know those stories are out there and we're tired. You know, they're tired of seeing what they call bad stories about Oakland in some local, some state, and a lot of national media. And that is what keeps me going in local and is what's going to keep me in local for the rest of my career.
That's journalist Tasneem Raja, co-founder of Cityside, the organization behind the local journalism outlets Berkeley Side, Oakland Side, and the upcoming Richmond Side. She was recently awarded the Gwen Ifill Award from the International Women's Media Foundation. Today's Cross Currents team includes Pat McMahon, Molly Blair Salier, Arundhati S. Nair, Julia Haney, James Rowlands, Ganadi Joe Johnson, Victor Tense, Shireen Adil, Lisa Morehouse, Angela Johnston, Marissa Ortega Welch, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.